Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Wisconsin homeowners and renters are facing an unprecedented affordability crisis, forcing candidates from the local to the federal level to propose solutions. But will the American dream of homeownership remain out of reach for Wisconsinites for the foreseeable future? We're talking with two housing experts today. We have Sam Wessel, who is a senior planner with the North Central Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, and Kurt Paulson, who is a professor of urban planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So, Kurt, I know you've been researching Wisconsin's housing market for some time. I want to ask you, how do current housing market conditions compare to what you've seen throughout your career?
So, really, we're at a point that's the worst I think any of us have ever seen it, right? And so you have prices are just through the roof. As you mentioned, housing affordability is really impacting middle-class families, the ability of first-time home buyers to buy a home. And for renters, it's an extreme level of cost burden, right? I mean, sometimes we would talk about how housing was really expensive in Madison or Waukesha because those are expensive areas. But now we're talking about a real housing affordability crisis in Fond du Lac County, in Sheboygan County, in Rice Lake. Across the state, you've seen house prices go up 30% to 40% just in the last 3 or 4 years.
So when journalists call this a historic housing crisis, that is not an exaggeration.
It's not an exaggeration. Maybe if we go back to the 1930s and the Great Depression. But this is largely a slow-burning crisis. We've just not built enough housing in the last 15 years since the Great Recession. So in one sense, we've never recovered from the Great Recession. And so things were kind of difficult when I first started studying this in 2015, 2019. But then you add COVID and all of the disruption there, and it's pretty bad.
Not getting any better anytime soon. We'll talk about some solutions. Sam, I want to ask you, you've been leading the housing studies for Wausau Metro, for Adams, Wood, and Juneau counties. What does the housing situation look like in North Central Wisconsin?
Sure, yeah. So we're not growing nearly as quickly as Madison, but we still have a lot of the same overlapping issues. And when I talk to developers, when I talk to contractors, realtors, that sort of thing, I get this answer of, you know, it's really a perfect storm. Everyone wants to blame one single thing, but it's a multitude of things that just are compounding themselves and creating a situation. And I would say the number one overarching theme here would be there's not enough housing. Even if people can afford it, it's not there. Or if they can get into it, then they have to sink all this money into repairs. People can't move from one product to the other, so housing doesn't get freed up, and so everyone's just sort of stuck.
Would you say that those folks in your part of the state are also experiencing a crisis?
Yes. Yep. People have noticed that there's an uptick in housing insecurity, and rent goes up, but the house doesn't, or the apartment doesn't get any nicer. Upgrades get delayed, and yeah.
Let's talk about some of the facts and figures around home ownership currently statewide. We're looking at the Wisconsin Realtors Association August home sales report, some of the most current information we have. They say there's a continued decline in the number of homes statewide on the market. The median home price is up 8% to $324,000 over the last year. Even though mortgage rates have improved in the last 12 months, the significant home price increase combined with only slight gains in median family income mean affordability remains low. Nationally, home prices also reached a new all-time high in 2024. According to the Harvard Center on Housing Studies, the median sales price is now five times the median household income. Kurt, who can afford to buy a home right now in Wisconsin?
Well, no one, really. And particularly if you're talking about, like, my parents were able to buy a home in Wausau on a teacher's salary, that kind of smaller house, that first-time home buyer, entry level, that doesn't exist. And so young people can't afford to buy homes. Seniors can't afford, really, to move out of their homes. And so, you know, part of what's driving this is the fact that on a per capita basis, the state of Wisconsin now builds less than half of what we used to build. Right, so we've added people, but we've actually slowed down our rate of housing production. And so we talk about the housing market being stuck. One of the reasons it's stuck is people like me, right? 65% of all mortgages in this state right now have a interest rate of less than 4%. So for a lot of us who refinanced during the pandemic, things are fine. But we can't afford to move.
We're staying in our
homes. We're stuck in our homes, which is not a bad thing. But when a region adds jobs or population and wants to have teachers or nurses or first-time homebuyers, there's just nothing for sale.
That
creates a generational problem. The other issue is it's 40% more expensive to build a home than it was in January of 2020, just on the construction cost. So even if we had the workforce and the land available, which we don't, construction costs are up 40%. So it's like what Sam said, a perfect storm. So the only people who can afford to buy homes are generally people who already have substantial equity, or for young people, you have to go to what we call the bank of mom and dad, right? And so that exacerbates all of our inequalities in terms of racial disparities in home ownership. It really is a challenge.
Interesting. What does home ownership, home affordability look like in north central Wisconsin? Are there any special factors in that part of the state, would you say?
Sure. So we serve 10 counties. It does vary quite a bit. We go from roughly the Dells all the way up to the UP border. And so we have a mix of seasonal homes, but then also your typical, you know, year-round working family type places to live. And one thing that's interesting is some of our counties are actually going down in population, mm-hmm. but there's still demand. Household size is getting smaller, which means even though the population drops off, the demand is still there. And that's a hard thing to explain. You know, people who bought their house 60 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever, right off the bat, it's, you know, well, why is there a shortage if we're not getting population? But it's also because households are growing in number, even if the population doesn't.
And that reduction in household size is not just north central Wisconsin. That's across, even in Milwaukee, right?
It's across the nation, right? And so Wisconsin, actually, the only household size that we're growing in is 1- and 2-person households. We're actually losing population in those 3- and 4-person households, right? And so a lot of that is seniors who are aging and remaining in place with just one of the spouses. But also a lot of young people prefer to live alone.
And you also have a change in demographic in north central Wisconsin. A lot of older people moving north. Is that right?
Yes. And there's a divide there, too, because if you're wealthy and you're retiring, you can afford a lot of house up in Vilas County on a lake somewhere. But if you're a seasonal resident who's been there your whole life, you're on fixed income, you might not have as many options. And then you have seasonal workers who are only there part of the year. Their local economy depends on that, but there's nowhere for them to live short term. That's a variety of factors. And say you had a multifamily proposed for seasonal workers, that's not always feasible when everything is well and septic. You need to have water and sewer typically for higher density stuff. On top of that, seniors who make too much to qualify for any kind of vouchers or subsidized housing, but they don't make that much more, sometimes that's the group that struggles the most because there's zero availability, and what often happens is the house is paid off and they just stay in it even if they can't continue to take care of it. When they would be just fine in an apartment that doesn't even have assisted living, maybe just snow removal and you know, newer construction where there's no deferred maintenance on it. And then that house, you know, should have been for the next family in line, but it's too poor
in
of
disarray.
Shape.
Yeah, sure.
So it's a domino effect.
You mentioned those workers from years ago, the police officer, the nurse, that starter home. Where are those starter homes? Is that related to what Sam was just saying?
Yeah, we haven't built starter homes in the United States in 50 years. And there's, again, multiple factors for that, one of which we'll talk about is the zoning and subdivision regulations, because you don't build a starter home on a quarter acre, 10,000 square foot lot. It's just too expensive, right? So the kind of smaller lots that we think of whenever you drive around almost any Wisconsin city, the kind of FHA type subdivisions from the 1940s, those were 5,000 and 6,000 square foot lots, right? And so you could build a smaller home on the smaller lot. We just haven't built those for 50 years. So that kind of entry rung on the ladder is certainly gone. And so just to Sam's point, the other way this housing crisis manifests is in older urban and rural neighborhoods. You have a lot of older housing that just hasn't been kept up. So the price is probably not high enough to get a lot of new construction to get developers to move in. So a lot of what we have to do is obviously rehab the existing housing. But that's very hard for a senior on fixed income. It's expensive.
You mentioned young people being priced out of the market, and I know some of your work has also talked about disparities in home ownership in Wisconsin. I think something I read that you wrote this, Wisconsin has one of the worst Black home ownership rates of any state.
Right.
I'm assuming these recent hikes in home costs have really affected any ability to reduce those disparities.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the Black home ownership rate nationwide is still at about 48%, which is no better than it was in 1968 when we passed the Fair Housing Act. But Wisconsin is about half that at 25-26%. And so it's made it a lot worse because as you pay more rent and your income hasn't increased, then, of course, it's harder to buy that entry-level house. But the truth is that a majority of our Black residents live in cities that have plenty of housing available at lower price points, but there's a lot of structural impediments in the mortgage market which make it hard for them to buy that $100,000 house in Janesville or Milwaukee rather than kind of a new $500,000 house in the suburbs.
Not just a construction problem, it's a financing problem.
Right, because it's a lot of the financing rules we adopted nationwide after the Great Recession were good and important, but they probably have tightened things too far so that banks don't make any money on a small dollar loan. Right, it'll cost a bank the same to write a $500,000 loan as a $80,000 loan. So they're just not going to write those kind of smaller dollar loans that would help someone buy an older home in a central city or in a small town.
Sam, Kurt mentioned the Great Recession as kind of the instigator here in the beginnings of our current housing crisis. Is this a story the same in north central Wisconsin? Is that when things started to trend this way?
Yeah, so a lot of small, family-owned developers, those kind of dropped out once the Great Recession happened and didn't come back. Mm-hmm. People like me were in high school and that happened. I could have been a developer or a contractor if I was interested and there was, if people were actually building stuff at that time, but I would have had no opportunity to learn. So there's a shortage of people in the pipeline too who would someday take over these businesses. So we're essentially all competing over the same developers and builders. And because incomes are lower in more rural areas, it's still more appealing to develop somewhere like Dane County, even though the regulations and land costs are way higher, because you can do the higher densities because there's demand for it. It's a lower risk than taking a chance on a smaller community where you have to haul your entire crew 2 hours away from where they're used to working.
Are those developers from the Great Recession, are they coming back? Will they come back?
No.
No.
I mean, so a lot of people assume that developers means these big national firms with deep pockets. But we just don't have that level of production builders in Wisconsin, other than, Newman Companies in Milwaukee area and Viridian here in Dane County. But even at that level, most builders and developers are small-scale enterprises. And what the 2008 crisis showed is the risk-reward was not worth it. They left the industry. Plus, a lot of them were older, and so they've retired. So if you think, one way to think about it is the total number of people employed in Wisconsin in the construction business is less now than it was in 2006, even though we've added a lot more people. So part of what's driving the shortage is a labor shortage, a shortage of builders. I like to say even if I could wave my wand and we get all the zoning and financing in place, we don't have enough people to build all the homes and apartments we need.
This is a really depressing conversation, I have to say. Nationally, they say the shortage of homes is around 4 million homes. The Wisconsin Policy Forum recently said that Wisconsin has a deficit of around 67,000 housing units. Is the need for homes the same everywhere, or are there regional pockets of Wisconsin where the situation is?
Well, so every place has a need for housing. And there's kind of two drivers of housing demand. One is just demographics. People get born, they die, they get married, they age through the process. So there's always going to be a need for housing that way. But what really drives housing demand is job growth. And so we have kind of two markets in Wisconsin. We have our fastest growing job center counties, right? And that's not just Dane and Waukesha County, but it's Brown County, Outagamie County in the Fox Valleys. It's Eau Claire and La Crosse. Marathon County has been, you know, slow and steady, but not great. But you keep adding demand from jobs and demographics as people age and they want to buy their own home. So we have a shortage everywhere. We have our biggest shortage in our fastest growing job counties, right? So I did a study and we had a shortage of 35,000 a few years ago. And half of that is in Dane, Waukesha, and Brown counties, because that's where the job growth is. And so you really need to look at kind of older areas that don't see a lot of growth, where we really need to rehab the existing housing. But in fast-growing counties with a lot of jobs, we just need to build a lot of housing.
And then there's this connection between the local economy and housing. Are you seeing that deficit too?
Yes. People are turning down job offers because they can't find a place to live. So even though on paper it looks like our region has the more abundant supply than other parts of the state, what's there is, you know, in rough shape, or it's too expensive because it's more of a seasonal home, you know, a higher end sort of deal. We don't have the, what I would call like the spec home subdivisions getting cranked out like the other parts of the state. So people will take a job and they say, wait a minute, I can't find anywhere to live. There's plenty of people I know my age who are from more rural parts of the state and they would love to move back by family, but between how good their job is where they are and then the lack of finding something that would be appealing to move into, they're just kind of stuck in a city when they might otherwise, you know, spread out throughout the state a little more.
Kurt, we've been hearing about this concern about outside investors buying up housing and selling it as commodity. Is that a significant problem in Wisconsin?
Well, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but no.
But it might be elsewhere.
Might be elsewhere, although the evidence is unclear as to whether outside capital flows really actually affects the price of housing. Now, in limited pockets, people in Door County will tell you that there's a concern that housing for workers is now Airbnbs. And you're starting to see some investor activity in some Milwaukee neighborhoods. But I don't think you're seeing a level of investor activity that's different. It's the who the investors are seems to be different. Because it used to be the kind of mom and pop, the small scale investors. Now you're seeing national companies. But it's, you know, in and of itself, an investor buying a property shouldn't affect the price or the quality of that property. But you are starting to hear some concerns that some of these national landlords don't treat their tenants well and charge exorbitant fees. I just haven't seen the data that shows that that's
contributing to the scarcity of housing to a great degree.
Right, because a unit of housing is a unit of housing, whether it's owner-occupied or investor-owned.
Someone can live there.
It's the shortage comes from the demand far exceeding the supply.
I know you mentioned this in North Central Wisconsin. You maybe don't have this particular issue, but you have the seasonal dwelling increase. I think I saw in your Wood County housing report the number of seasonal dwelling units doubled between 2010 and 2022. What's been the impact of that then on those homeowners there?
Yeah, it's really interesting because it is driven by outside demand. You know, people retiring somewhere that's more low cost of living than whatever large city they might have come from. You know, access to nature, that sort of thing. It's interesting because it does impact the housing market. Prices do go up, and you know, when there's local developers, they're going to go for the higher end products because their margins are wider to build. At the same time, your average working family doesn't necessarily want to live on a lake 45 minutes from the nearest grocery store. It's usually more the early retirees, I would call them, like more of that lifestyle. Whereas, similar to what Kurt said, statewide, locally, people want to be near the jobs and the schools and the other amenities that they're going to be using every day. So it's kind of a yes and a no, where it's definitely transformed the landscape, but it has outcompeted some prospective buyers, but you know, it's not the same type of product most people are looking for.
What is the size and price range of house that we really need now throughout Wisconsin, would you say?
Right, so to get back to that study you quoted from Harvard, right now the median price is 5 times income. And we know from research that you want that to be at about 3.5 times your income. So in any community, you just figure out what's the price of a starting teacher salary or police officer salary, and that's $50,000 or $60,000. So what we really need is housing that's about $200,000 or less. Now, in Dane County, people laugh. Because
when's the last time you saw that?
The cheapest we could build in Dane County is $400,000, right? And so it really depends on your market. What we need to do is, in really expensive places, deliver a lot of smaller units at lower price points at scale to kind of bring down the cost of housing. And so that is everything from the kind of attached townhouse to the condo to maybe a smaller house on a smaller lot. That's the kind of housing we need in these workforce counties. In less developed or rural counties that have lower price points, you really need some new product that's at that kind of $300,000 or $350,000 price range, but the rest is going to be rehab. So the people need to understand the cost to build a unit of housing is the same in Wausau as in Madison. The difference is really the land cost. So, but the construction costs have just gone so far high in the last 4 years that it's just more expensive to build anything anywhere.
The affordability of housing is just one part of the equation. We started our conversation also talking about rent, the exorbitant cost of rent. So mm-hmm. Let's look at what's happening there. According to a report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, 45.4% of Wisconsin renters in 2022 were considered rent burdened. That means they spent at least 30% of their income on housing, the maximum percentage generally recommended. 23% were considered severely rent burdened. That means they're spending more than half of their income on housing, and those numbers have been going up in recent years. Sam, I know in the Wood County housing study, there was a quote in there. It said, in Wood County, a worker making minimum wage would have to work 86 hours a week mm-hmm. to afford a two-bedroom apartment. That sounds pretty dire.
Yes. And, again, with attracting workers, young professionals, eventually they might want a house, but they need a rental right when they first arrive. So school districts are having trouble recruiting, hospitals, people who don't have quite the savings because they just came out of college, but after a few years they would like to move into a house. They can't even test out our region necessarily because there's not a rental to move into. It's kind of like when you go to the grocery store, you don't buy one of every item there, you buy what you need. But for some reason with housing, we've decided, well, we don't need more of that because it's not what I want. And so that makes things complicated too.
Why is this happening? Why are rents going up at this rate?
So as with everything, there's multiple factors, right? People want to look for a villain, but there's multiple factors. The main thing driving rent costs up has been the construction costs also going up. And I think it's helpful to explain, when the cost of building something new goes up, then the cost of the existing supply also goes up because you still have people wanting to rent. There's just fewer units, right? So now it's, again, 40% more expensive to build new rentals, which means that even though there's rental demand, the only way to make that pencil out is at the high end of the market. The other reason is that, again, since people are not moving into home ownership, they're staying in rentals, so rental demand has been strong. But the third reason is really have to do with the vacancy rate in rental housing, right? So I did my own study here in the Madison area, and when vacancies are above 5%, that's a soft market, rents actually go down in the next months. When vacancies are below 5%, rents go up in the next couple of months, right? Because a landlord, whatever else you want to think about them, they look at the market and they see, oh, the market's tight, I'm going to raise rent a little bit, right? And so particularly in high demand areas, whether it's downtown Milwaukee or downtown Madison, you have strong demand and you just haven't produced enough units. Now I know people in Madison, they look around, they see
apartment buildings everywhere.
But the way to think about it is if you add 100 units of housing, but you add 105 households, your vacancy rates are actually going down. And that's what we've seen particularly in Madison. But it also affects Eau Claire and La Crosse and Wausau because people need housing and we just haven't built a lot of rental housing.
And as I said, if we want the jobs, we need the housing too. So I want to, we know it's election season. I need to get to these questions. And we have some candidates who've been proposing solutions at all levels, but I want to talk about our candidates at the federal level, the presidential candidates. Kurt, I'm going to direct these questions to you. Vice President Harris has proposed $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. She's proposed some tax credits, and then she's talked about promises to build 3 million new homes. I'm assuming you've looked at these proposals.
Yes.
Would this have an impact?
Well, the most important thing to say about political proposals is that housing policy, like any realm of economic policy, is subject to trade-offs. And of course, once you get into political season, my plan is all benefits and no costs, and the other person's plan is all costs and no benefits. And so just saying we're going to build 3 million homes would really help, because we have a gap of about 3 or 4 million homes. What I don't quite understand about the proposal is we currently build about 1.2 million homes every year. So I'm not sure if that means 3 million in total or 3 million extra from what we're already building. But both candidates have highlighted housing supply, and that really is half of our answer, right? We can't solve any of these housing crises without more units. But of course, just building units won't solve the entire housing crisis, because there's two housing affordability problems. One is at the middle of the market based on supply deficiency, but the other is the fact that lower income and first-time homebuyers actually can't afford what's there even if you built it. And so in that regard, the housing tax credits could be helpful. But I think people have to understand, if you spend more money on housing but you don't build more supply, the prices will go up.
It's not fixing the problem. I want to talk about about the other side of the aisle. We have former President Trump talking about the influx of immigrants that are causing the housing crisis, saying that they are competing for scarce housing supply and therefore making the cost of housing to go up. Do you see that contributing to the problem in Wisconsin?
I don't. And I think everybody who's looked at this honestly says that that's not the main driver of housing costs. So, and we just have to be honest that immigrants comprise at least 25% of the construction workforce. So if immigration was reduced, housing would become more expensive because you wouldn't have people to build housing. So as with everything, there's a lot of trade-offs, right? And so I always say that both candidates and both parties have put on tariffs in the last couple of years on lumber and steel and other things that go into housing. That also drives up the cost of housing. So like anything, there's these trade-offs that if you want housing to be lower priced, you know, you're going to maybe see costs increase in some other sector of the economy.
Do federal policies really have the most impact on improving housing market conditions, or do you think that changes at the state and or local level are more impactful?
I want to say all of the above. So the world we live in is largely a result of some serious federal legislation that came out in the 1930s that really transformed our country's landscape, even though we treat it as the status quo, you know, single-family homes, subdivisions, just the method by which we produce housing. But at the same time, we're at a point where we're realizing we have all these regulations that went in when we were in a more polluted country or a noisier, you know, we were trying to separate industrial from residential. But now it's to the point where it's like, okay, do houses need to be 60 feet apart? Can they be 30 feet apart instead? We can get a lot more lots out of the same piece of land. That's less roads and pipes per person in that subdivision to take care of over the long term. So it's important to really get involved at the local level too. Look at your zoning ordinances, your planning ordinances, talk to your boards and commissions, and you know what can be done. There's some things that are really low-hanging fruit that can be done. There's other things that are a heavier lift, such as you know starting to assemble parcels of land that can be sold to a developer at a discount or any sort of financial programs or assistance that might be out there. I was going to say, back to the trade-offs, I wanted to mention one thing I hear too is homes have become more energy efficient, which no one is against, but at the same time, even though you're saving your bills over the long term, over the life of your mortgage, the upfront cost of getting into that house goes up a little bit too, because the insulation package that needs to be installed affects, you know, the front end, and then even if you see a savings over time. So
Kurt, we're getting to the end here, and I need to ask this question. We're in a biennial budget year. State has a huge surplus.
Yes.
We've got a lot of people running for state legislature in November. Yeah. Should they be prioritizing new funding for housing and changes in state policy as part of what's going to happen in the legislature and the budget next year?
Yes.
And where?
I mean, so okay, but we have to say that
show's over, no.
In 2023, the legislature and the governor, in a bipartisan fashion, did put together a $500 million housing and workforce housing package, which is being rolled out now, and projects are being funded across the state. And I always call that a down payment because, you know, housing is expensive, but in the same sense, not addressing your housing situation is expensive. But, you know, there's what it costs to produce a unit of housing and what people can afford. So unless you're willing to spend public dollars on some gap or incentive to fill that gap, the gap will continue to grow. So I hear all the time from legislators this is their number one issue. The business community says it's their number one issue. But there's no easy solutions other than the kind of reforms that make it easy to build more housing. And the people already there don't want the housing built because it's cheaper and it crowds the schools. Or projects that spend money on infrastructure or housing assistance. So I would say to legislators, if you don't want to reform zoning and how municipal governments approve housing, if you don't want to touch that, then the only other option is really to spend money. And you can understand that that money is a trade-off with childcare needs, broadband needs, workforce development needs. But that's why we say that if you don't solve the housing issue, you can't really solve the workforce issue because there's communities all across the state that can't get workers to come because there's no housing.
It all goes back to housing. Yeah. Very complicated issue I'm sure we'll continue to hear more about. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.